When you have insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds. And recently obtained emails show that Donald Trump was always planning to say the election was stolen. I am shocked. I'm totally shocked. We have such a great show for you today. White House Communications Director, the one, the only, Ben LaVolt, talks to us about the State of the Union and what lies ahead for the president. Then we're going to play you a clip from our sold-out City Winery show featuring the one, the only, Rick Wilson, and surprise guest, George Conway. But first, we have the Washington Post's own Dana Milbank. Welcome back to Fast Politics, Dana Milbank.
Molly, it's a thrill, as always, to be with you.
So I love you and love having you on the podcast.
Oh, I love
you too.
So
I'm always excited to have you. Oh, I'm very like not DC because I like hug people and tell them that I like them. That's like not, I feel like that's not the culture.
It's my culture in DC. You can hang with me anytime.
But I wanted to talk to you about this piece you wrote for the Washington Post where it's so crazy. I mean, I don't know if it's like, it's not that crazy, but it is also that crazy. My month of living Republicanly. So you, I want you to, I'm not going to steal your thunder here because it's so hilarious. So explain to us what you did.
Well, you know that it is possible, and throughout the country, really, the laws vary by state, to vote in whatever primary you want to. It just, as long as you register as that party a certain number of days before the election. And in D.C., it's very easy. You just got to become a Republican 3 weeks before the primary. And so at a friend's suggestion, that is exactly what I did. I've always been independent, a registered independent, you know, because I'm scrupulously neutral in all things political. And also, I just don't like messing around, you know, voting for local primaries I don't really know about.
Let's be honest. You live in the district.
Yeah. So my vote is a total throwaway anyway, and it doesn't really count. But here was a chance for my vote to count, because in 2016, Marco Rubio and John Kasich actually beat Trump, who came in a distant third. So I was like, you know, I could be part of Trump's only defeat in the entire primary season. It turns out, indeed, he did lose in District of Columbia. He also lost in Vermont, so we don't have the sole distinction. But, you know, there were only, I think, 1,250 votes for Nikki Haley. That's how big the Republican Party is in all of D.C. So she won with 63%, which means all of 2,000 people voted in this primary. But I was one of them. So I feel like I had a measurable effect on dealing this devastating defeat to Donald Trump.
What I love about this story is that Trump has done a lot of, I wanted to say tweets, but we know they're truths, a lot of truths, the irony, too rich, on how these radical leftist Democrats are voting in the primary and denying him of his coronation. So you are one of those radical leftist Democrats.
Well, except I was more of a radical leftist independent, technically. In fact, I hadn't yet become a Republican when he was railing about them doing it to him in New Hampshire. And there, in fact, you had to do it months in advance of the primaries. I was like, all right, this really gets under his skin. So it was all the better reason to do it. And, you know, he's been all about how if you vote for Nikki Haley, you're banished permanently from MAGA. And, of course, this thrilled a lot of Haley supporters. The idea absolutely thrilled me, you know. And I've always sort of, you know, styled myself sort of, you know, rhino, lowercase rhino, just... you know, never quite a real Republican. And that's what I was officially.
So one of the things that you did was you just embraced all of the stupid culture war stuff that Republicans have, that have been a sort of a hallmark of Trumpism. You ate a Chick-fil-A. You tell us the other things like that that you did.
Right. And that's why I called it my month of living Republicanly. Because, you know, it just seemed really cheap to really just be a rhino. So I thought I'd really do the stereotypical Republican thing. So I ate at Chick-fil-A. I shopped at Hobby Lobby. I got a Back the Blue placard that I can have up on my table. I didn't know if I could sleep easy at night. So I bought a MyPillow from Mike Lindell. It's one with he's screened onto the cover of the pillow holding a flag and the Constitution. I have that for sleeping.
How is the pillow?
It's very lumpy and flimsy. I compare it to Donald Trump's legal arguments. I use the Sean Hannity special and it only cost me $15. And anyway, my cat likes it, like, you know, is sleeping on it right now, no doubt. So I got my Mike Lindell pillow, trying to help him out of debt. I shopped at Hobby Lobby. I went to the Museum of the Bible, you know, where Mike Johnson
went. I've been there.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed because, you know, he went there and said how God, you know, made him into the new Moses at the Red Sea moment. But it was like totally nonpartisan. It was like sort of a Disney version of the Bible.
Yes.
So I was kind of disappointed because I wanted to have more of a MAGA justification.
It doesn't have a real MAGA. My eldest son took me there.
Yeah, Hobby Lobby was more MAGA than that. But it was tiring. And so after that, I went to a sports bar and watched NASCAR. There was a pile up at the beginning of the race. There was a photo finish and there were all these, you know, hair dye for men and COPD ads. So I really felt right at home with that. And then I drove 3 hours out into Virginia to go to a gun show. And that was really, I mean, those were my MAGA people right there.
Did they have disgusting T-shirts that say like racist and over-sexualized things about our vice president?
Yeah, there was the Confederate flags and the three percenters and Trader Joe. I bought one that said, I support Donald Trump. I drink beer. I eat meat. I have guns to protect my family. And if you don't like it, move. Or something to that effect. It was very, very pithy.
The lack of pithiness with the Trumpy accessories are because you don't have a lot of writers writing that kind of thing.
This is true. They had some great targets that I could shoot at with my guns. There was one with a cowboy with a, you know, red dot on his chest and a red forehead. And then he had actual sort of, you know, life looking genitals in blue that you could shoot at. Yeah, you know, and there's the survival food, the freeze dried food and first aid stuff. There were the Patriots there, the Massanutten Patriots having their election integrity meeting.
Oh, Jesus.
So, you know, these were, I felt that these were my people as well. So I think that really rounded out the experience. And it's not that I would want to necessarily be part of that culture. Although I have to say, I switched, you know, after I voted, I switched my party back to independent. And then I was passing a Chick-fil-A and I was thinking, I can still eat there. It's good.
So I thought Chick-fil-A stopped giving money to anti-LGBT causes.
Well, then I'm not going to eat there anymore.
Did you have the fried Oreos at Chick-fil-A?
No, I didn't even know about this. You see, you're a better Republican than I am, Molly.
I'm sure that's not true.
I should have checked with you first on this. No, I just got the fried chicken sandwich and the milkshake. But
was it good?
It was really good. And I think I'm just gonna stick with it. Whatever their politics are, it's good.
So let's talk about what else is happening in the Beltway besides your weird and hilarious story. We are sort of at the end of primary season. Would you say that's fair?
I would say it's over, yes.
Yeah. And now we have 8 months of limping along until this election.
That is a very dreary thought. And I feel it personally as well, because I've sort of been following, you know, I was going to cover the primary, but there's no primary to cover. So I've basically been slumming it, covering the House Republicans who, it's sort of cheap fun, but they never really disappoint.
Cheap fun.
You know, they're always
right.
going to do something wacky. But, you know, after this week, I was like, all right, I'm going to finally have to graduate and start covering this interminable presidential campaign. And I'm really not looking forward to it. I can already sense the procrastination.
Let's have 2 seconds on cheap fun. We got to go back because.
Oh, please. Yes.
I think this is the stupidest group of Republicans that the House has ever seen.
Well, and that's a high bar, but I think, yes. I mean, objectively, you'd have to say they cleared it. This week, what did we do? We spent the last year getting rid of the speaker, having all these showdowns and everything. And then what are we doing?
Gates.
And they're basically passing the same, you know, the same spending
right.
bill that Kevin McCarthy agreed to a year ago. So we just wasted the last year having all of these fights that amounted to nothing.
Basically, this entire thing is because Matt Gaetz was mad at McCarthy for allowing an ethics investigation into him.
Yes, which is still proceeding.
I mean, think about how stupid that is.
You're right. It's hard to sort of overstate the stupidity. But, you know, it's not like they've done nothing. They've impeached Mayorkas without any impeachable offenses. They're very close to impeaching Biden, even though it turns out the whole case is, you know, imploded because they're relying on a whole bunch of felons.
The main witness is in jail in Nevada.
One's in jail. The other one is on the lam.
For his own protection, likely, because
right.
they're worried about the Russians killing him.
And they want to have a Hunter Biden hearing with various of his accusers, but they're all going to have to come in orange jumpsuits.
Yeah, the Mayorkas impeachment, though, is my favorite of the two failed impeachments because now they've realized they can't bring it to the Senate.
Right. After all that and saying it's really an emergency and our national security depends on getting this guy out of office, they're like, all right, we're just going to sit on this for a while. yes, that's particularly delightful. I mean, I guess they're hoping that they can draw maximum attention to it if they pull back for a while. But it does sort of undermine the whole professed need to get rid of the man in the first place.
My favorite stupid moment of this stupidest Congress is actually the moment that they decide that they're going to get rid of Santos. And then over the weekend, leadership realizes they actually really need his vote because they spend the weekend doing the math that 2 is less than 3. And they somehow on Monday morning, they figure that out and they start to try to get people to vote against expelling Santos, but it's too late.
Right. The ship had sailed and they narrowly do. And they are correct that they can't govern without Santos, but I mean, they couldn't really govern with him. So it's not a huge difference, but yeah, I mean, like when the Mayorkas impeachment went down the first time, it was by one vote, and there's Santos tweeting, "Do you miss me now?" And Gaetz says, "Yes, I miss him already." In fairness, they couldn't really govern before, and you've seen it. I think now 6 before this Congress, they had a single rule. You know how the procedural way you start a debate had not failed in 20 years. And now they've done it 6 times over the last year. So it would take 120 years to have gotten to that under normal proceedings, but they were able to do it all.
Yeah, you know, you got to respect the incompetence. So, you know, this is just the stuff, you know, if you watch C-SPAN, it's not like the mainstream media is picking up the really crazy stuff. there is still more crazy stuff.
Well, I am trying to fill that vacuum. I've been trying to list every little bit of crazy. And I don't know if you know, I have a whole book coming out. I think it's looking like September. It's going to be called The Fools on the Hill. It's just a compendium of crazy. And I'm just going to keep hitting you over the head with all the craziness, lest you forget any one delicious nugget of it.
One of the things that I'm struck by was actually, you know, so it looks like they're going to be able to pass this, the first tranche of spending bills, right? These are the bills that we were just talking about. But on the floor, Chip Roy is furious and gives this insane speech yesterday where it was like, we didn't do nearly enough. We should be cutting the FBI by more. I mean, what is happening?
Well, so one third of the House Republicans oppose this. So it just sort of shows you, and that's roughly the crazy quotient in the House. And I mean, but that's more than enough to, you know, screw up the entire operations of the place, and they have. But, you know, it does show you that if Mike Johnson or if McCarthy before him actually wanted to try to govern, you could do it with Democratic votes. They would stand up to the crazy. So the option has always been there. It's just like they needed to exhaust every other option before they could do the most sensible thing. So, yeah, the spending bill, they got rid of all the or virtually all of the crazy riders about abortion and trans and gay rights and DEI and, you know, all the other cultural war issues. So they just tossed all of those. They stuck to the spending agreement that McCarthy and Biden reached a year ago. And lo and behold, it sails through with, I think, all Democrats, but two or something like that, and two-thirds of the Republicans. So it's not so hard, is it?
So let's talk for a minute about, even though this is the rematch presidential race that nobody wanted, where the stakes are impossibly high yet again, there are some really strange congressional races that are percolating. MAGA really continues to pick some of the most incredibly bad candidates I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be tough to exceed what they did the last time around.
They may have done it, though.
They might have. I mean, you got to, you know, if you look at North Carolina, the gubernatorial nominee, I mean, that's something. They did get rid of that. I think it's Sandy Smith was the name. She's the one who's sort of been accused by her ex-husband of trying to run her over with the car and throwing an alarm clock at him. She lost in the general election last time. This time they were able to bump her out of the way in the primary. But yeah, I mean, I think for every one that, you know, what's left of the party establishment is able to knock down, a couple of the crazies still get through. They've just sort of lost control of the process. So it's what Tom Massey said a few years ago, that, you know, he was confused as to what the ideology was of the Republican primary voters. Like, are they, you know, libertarian? What are they? And he finally realized they just want the craziest son of a bitch in the race.
Thomas Massey was happy to oblige. I mean, this is a guy who went to MIT and now he says crazy stuff.
Right. And now he walks around with his pocket protector debt counter. So truth is, he's one of the more sane ones in the House right now.
One of the things that I was struck by was Nikki Haley this week dropped out of the race. She goes, this is like my favorite thing. Like, she's so quaint. She's like, what our biggest problem is our national debt. I was like, I haven't heard this since, what is this, 2003?
Right. When she's like, No Child Left Behind.
National
debt.
1,000 points of light.
Right. No, it's a good.
Shining City in the Hill.
It was a great throwback. She's not wrong. Right? It's just there's been a universal decision to just ignore this, not worry about entitlements. Just ride off into the sunset.
Do you think that being fiscally sane will come back?
There are so many things we wonder about. Will just general sanity and the belief in a strong America leading overseas, will that come back? Will democracy come back? Well, I would think that you would reach a debt crisis at some point, and then that would force a reckoning. But it never actually seems to happen. It has not injured our standing in the world. So, you know, all the people who are saying, you know, Social Security is going bankrupt, Medicare is going bankrupt, and we won't be able to issue new debt as the United States, it just hasn't happened. Maybe it just hasn't happened yet, but I've sort of given up on any sort of prudence.
Thank you so much, Dana Milbank.
Molly, it's been a pleasure as always.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, right? Well, not so fast. What about your out-of-pocket costs? That can be a lot of money for you and your family. And if you're like me, you can't help but wonder, was I overbilled? You're not alone. It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? It's a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. HealthLock finds medical bill errors before you pay. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Ben Lebolt is the White House Communications Director. Welcome to Fast Politics. Wait, what is your fancy title, Ben Lebolt?
White House Communications Director.
That seems very fancy.
I can search for a new title if it's too much.
No, it's good. We like a fancy title here at Fast Politics. Since you are in the admin, I now first want to talk to you about things that happened to me on television last night at 1 o'clock in the morning. You may not be used to having questions phrased quite like this, but this is where we are. So last night on television at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm with Tim Miller. He's quite wonderful. I love him. But we were talking about it, and he was saying that out of the New Yorker magazine profile, he said, well, he said, I'm worried that the White House doesn't think the polls are right and isn't reactive enough and might be complacent. Just for a minute, since you work there,
yeah,
tell us why that is not something that necessarily people have to worry about.
Yeah, look, well, I think entering this year, you know, everybody should know what's at stake. We're quite clear that American democracy is on the line, that rights and freedoms for Americans across the country are on the line. If you're a woman who wants to make their own healthcare decisions, if you're a parent who believes they should decide what books your kids have access to rather than an ideological governor, if you believe that January 6th was an insurrection, not a celebration of patriots, I think everybody clear, driven by the president, are quite clear on what the stakes are of the president's success on behalf of the American people. In some ways, this year reminds me a little bit of 2012, when I served as the press secretary for the Obama-Biden reelection campaign at that time. And we went into the year knowing that the country was divided and that the race was essentially tied. And I think we find ourselves in that same position today. And so, you know, we're now entering the portion of the year where, you know, we're moving closer towards the end of the primaries and the two candidates entering the general election. I think the State of the Union speech is sort of the president's first appeal to the country as a whole, the highest viewership we'll expect the president to see all year, and really to start to reach people with his message. He'll then follow that with travel to key states across the country and make sure that people hear, you know, the contrast version of that message and the choice. And so everybody here from the president on down is up night and day, recognizing the stakes, doing everything we can to communicate both about the president's record and what's at stake this year.
I want to talk to you about this speech. This is the State of the Union is an incredible opportunity to talk about some of the stuff that I feel like the Biden administration has accomplished that they haven't gotten credit for in the very narrow and likely wrong polling. So let's talk about sort of the accomplishments that you highlighted in this speech.
Well, dear Rick, Molly, I mean, I think the State of the Union offered a few things. It offered a chance for the president to look back for the largest audience that he'll face in a long time and talk through the fact that we overcame the pandemic that was killing so many Americans, that we've collectively built the strongest economy in the world. We've brought inflation down more than any other country, that wages are significantly outpacing inflation, that the racial wealth gap is the lowest it's been in 20 years, that more jobs have been created, 15 million under this administration, than any presidential administration in history. So those are things that people may have heard bits and pieces of before, but they didn't collectively hear it until Thursday. And we're in a lot different situation this year coming out of the supply chain with inflation coming down than we were last. So that was an important part of the case to be made. The president also looked forward about what must be done now. You know, some of these accomplishments could be significantly expanded to impact many more Americans. So, you know, with insulin capped at $15 for seniors, well, the president has proposed we should be able to do that for all Americans who require insulin. Capping prescription drug costs at $2,000 out of pocket a year for seniors, let's offer that to all Americans. Housing costs, this is something that has been a persistent problem facing Americans up and down the economic scale. The president has proposed some tax breaks to provide mortgage relief and building more housing to keep the price of rent down. He recommitted to things like making sure that IVF is available to every single American, and that the rollback of Roe, that we stop that we restore Roe, and, you know, all these implications for women and families across the country. So that's a chance to look forward. And then also to just talk about what's on the line and what the contrast is against, you know, MAGA Republicans. And the president is a defender of democracy. This is a very significant moment in U.S. history that will come to a fore this November. He stood up for democracy at home and abroad. He's standing up for individual rights and freedoms. Republicans used to be said that they were for freedoms, but they've passed hundreds of bills in state legislatures to take freedoms away and certainly are responsible for the fall of Roe versus Wade at the Supreme Court. And look, their economic approach hasn't worked. You know, the president's predecessor showered billionaires and corporations with $2 trillion in tax cuts. It exploded the deficit. The middle class had to pay for it, and they didn't see any benefits out of it. And so, you know, the president laid out the stakes and laid out the contrast in a really compelling way.
Right. So one of the many arguments that I have with people in the pundit industrial complex, by the way, I think they're going to kick me out, is that Joe Biden is not a president for you. He's a president for more working class Americans in a way that is, I think, really sort of like a thing that the Democratic Party sort of lost sight of. And one of the things that makes me think about that is like Biden has had this quest against junk fees. It's small. It's very unsexy, but I actually think it's something voters really do care about. Can you talk about that and other things like it?
I think the president's test is always, is this something that your family would talk about around the Thanksgiving table? And people like us, Molly, obviously we've been hyper-political for a big portion of our lives, but you know, the average American, the average family isn't like that. And you know, when I get together with my extended family over Thanksgiving, there's still a lot of people who say, you know, I'm just not interested in politics. It doesn't have that big of an impact on my life, which I've argued to various extents over the years. But I got to tell you, it's stuff like junk fees, where they took a trip, they were loaded up with all these resort fees. They didn't even stay at a resort, you know, it doubled the cost of the trip. Or, you know, they want to go see a concert or a game, and, you know, the ticket company is doubling the fee for that and not disclosing it. I mean, the president's lens has always been the family and household he grew up with and around in Scranton, Pennsylvania and Claymont, Delaware, you know, working families who struggle to make ends meet, who aren't 100% sure that they'll have job security or financial security and have to strap things together every couple of weeks. And he has kept those Americans, those hardworking Americans, at the heart of his presidency. He's made sure that the earners on the bottom of the wage scale have actually seen the biggest gains under this administration as wages have gone up. He's made sure that the racial wealth gap has closed. He's addressed areas like student debt relief, which had really burdened families and prevented them from, you know, putting down a down payment on a house or having another kid. He's focused on things like the child tax care credit and the economy to make sure that this is just the lens is, does it impact the daily life of hardworking Americans? And if so, then he's got time to focus on it.
So I think that's an important point about the junk fees and the sort of smaller pieces of legislation that may not be mass deportation squads, but will actually help people's lives. So talk to us about some of the top lines from the speech and also just some like IVF abortion. I would love you to talk about like sort of the health freedom aspect.
The president believes that this is a significant moment in history that we're living through, where democracy is on the line abroad and at home. And he draws a connection between what's happening abroad in Ukraine and in Europe, where Putin's on the march. He's waging a war of aggression against Ukraine. He won't stop there. We know that when dictators and authoritarians are on the march, that they'll go into other countries. He's signified that he would like to do so, at least into the Baltics. And that if we don't stop him there, he'll continue. And our NATO alliance, the strongest alliance in history, will be threatened. And by the way, if he enters into a European country that's part of the NATO alliance, we're at war. So we've got to stop Putin in Ukraine, and we've got to stop, you know, bowing down to Putin and his government and imply that it's just okay for authoritarians like Putin to seize territory that's not theirs. Well, we're also facing a really significant moment at home, and a significant risk to our democracy became very clear on January 6th, where thousands of insurrectionists stormed the Capitol and tried to overturn the results of a free and fair election. And MAGA Republicans have embraced, and the president's predecessor embraced those people, not as insurrectionists, not as criminals, but as patriots. Well, that's a very dangerous moment for our country that has not been fully alleviated. And the president believes we need to confront that directly. So that's one. Secondly, there's been a rollback of rights and freedoms. The rights and freedoms of Americans across the country are under assault. If you're a gay person that believes their identity should be recognized, if you're a woman who wants to make their own healthcare decisions, if you're worried about what's happening in schools where entire programs and chapters of history are just being torn out of books. Well, this is a moment where we need to fight back for our freedoms and to defend our individual liberties. And the president believes that this is a year where we'll make big decisions on that front. And at the heart of things, as we talked about earlier, is the president believes we need to continue to build the economy from the bottom up and middle out instead of the top down. We know what the results have been. Record job creation, the strongest economy in the world, record contracts for workers, unions are expanding, wages are rising. The policies that the president has put into place, which, by the way, some people said were too aggressive when he did so, has led to those things. He believes we need to continue our progress. And the MAGA Republicans, all they want to do is the same trickle-down economic expansion of tax breaks for billionaires and corporations. Well, guess what the president thinks tax fairness should mean? It should mean charging billionaires and corporations their fair share, that we should actually have a minimum tax on billionaires, that we should raise the minimum tax on corporations, that we can actually do things like fund a child tax credit in this country for working Americans.
So let me ask you two questions. So one of the things that you guys are going to get into trouble with in this election, and you're already seeing it in some of the exit polling, is progressives who, you know, in some ways they don't understand just how much the Supreme Court sucks. And so I want to talk to you about like student debt. One of the things I think has been really amazing is that the Biden administration has been quietly working around the clock to try to cancel student debt, but not so easy. You guys have canceled certain tranches. Talk to me about where you are and what's happening with that. And also, do you think people can understand that the Supreme Court really is just going around trying to undermine legislation at every point?
Well, the good news is you can see from public polling that more Americans know about the work that the president's doing on student debt relief than the progress we're making on a lot of other issues. So this is one area that's broken through. I think it's broken through in part because the Supreme Court overturned what the president was trying to do in terms of canceling student debt for millions of Americans. But he didn't allow the Supreme Court decision to stop. Is cancel student debt for 4 million Americans to the tune of $138 billion in debt relief through every executive lever that he has available to do that. And every couple of weeks, every month, there are thousands of new borrowers getting a letter or an email from the president saying that their debt is canceled or that their payments are reduced. So he's attacking this from every single angle. And I think it shows the type of work he's done throughout the presidency. You know, he doesn't believe this is a country that should have crumbling infrastructure. So he passed legislation to get 46,000 infrastructure projects off the ground, modernized across the country. He doesn't think Europe and China should lead the world on that. He thinks the United States should. He dug into the supply chain crisis that was causing inflation, into individual issues to look at things like semiconductors, which power refrigerators and cars. We invented those in America, but they were being built overseas in Asia. And the president passed bipartisan legislation to make sure we're building those in America again. Factories are getting off the ground in places from New York to Arizona to make sure that those chips are built here in the United States. I mean, he really took and looked at the pandemic and the financial crisis that came out of it to say, what do we need to do to build our economy in a way that's helping working families, that's bringing prices down, and that's addressing the cost issue that Americans are facing at home? And so that's really been the heart of his domestic policy agenda.
Yeah. One of the things that I've been impressed with that you guys have done is we have this attention economy. The goal here is to get in front of voters and also to inspire young people. How is the Biden administration talking to constituents in ways that are a little bit creative and not necessarily traditional? Because I think that you guys are doing interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, look, you know, from the perch of my job, there's nothing more important than that. And it's what I spend every day on, is figuring out how we reach the average person across the country. And you have to realize the average person is not consuming political news, right? They're going about the day. They may have, you know, a morning show or dayside TV on, muted, you know, catching bits and pieces of it as they're, you know, making lunch for a family member or heading to a job. At night, you know, after dinner, people are watching The Bachelor, you know, more than they're watching the evening news. And so,
and some people don't have cable, like anyone under 50.
Exactly. There's lots of cord cutters now. Streaming's increasingly important. And so the media has just become more fractured. People have added new channels to their diet, but they haven't removed the old channels. And so there's diminishing returns on each interview or news event. And so what we have to do is figure out how to reach people everywhere throughout their day, on their smartphone, on consumer media that doesn't tend to cover political news, on digital media, through every social media platform available. We produce our own content. We talk to the media. We talk to the media at the White House. We talk to the media in the States. We brief influencers who have large reach with their own audiences. We need to reach people across ages and demographics wherever they get their news. So look, like, we've got, you know, talking to you right now, we've got a podcast strategy that White House didn't have 4 years ago. So we look at information consumption and we work backwards from that to make sure we're reaching people.
Ben Lebault, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll come back.
It was great to talk to you and would love to. Thanks, Molly.
And now we have a special clip from our sold-out show at City Winery in New York City with Rick Wilson and George Conway.
One of the things about Robbie Kaplan is you can't just get any lawyer for that case. I mean, she really is singularly very smart and good.
Yeah, and the way I got to know her was she has another case against Trump, which most people don't know about. It was a class action. I don't think it got certified as a class action, but it involves lots and lots of people who
were ripped off. Is it for the steaks?
They were ripped.
Trump steaks?
No.
Trump water?
No. It's a
Trump University?
No. But it was a ripoff. It's called
Trump vitamins?
No. No, what is it?
The Donald J. Trump for President campaign 2001.
Free drinks for that table. Where we go there?
See, so I ACN, told you.
ACN, right? Very smart crowd. ACN was this Ponzi scheme where it was like, you can get rich, just, you know, enroll in our program, send us money. And it was what they call a multi-level marketing scheme.
And they
pushed it on The Apprentice. He did, and
yep.
What was it?
Don Jr. and
it was
and,
some kind
and
of
I am shocked Don Jr. was involved.
And basically,
in
all
this
these
shock,
people lost a boatload of money, and there was, you know, they, you can demonstrate. Apparently, the evidence is pretty strong that you can demonstrate. Basically, there was no way anybody other than Donald Trump and the founders of ACN were going to make any money on this. So I had read this complaint. Well, because the judge didn't certify it as a class action, refused or uncertified it as a class action, so that piece of it's going up. So it's not gonna get tried this year. Yeah. So, but you know, someday he's gonna have to get out of prison to testify in this case.
But I mean, you're bullish.
Maybe they'll just let him testify by satellite from the. They'll have to shut down the license plate making room for a couple of hours, and he can have his deposition.
I'm running the prison laundry now. It's the best run laundry in any federal correctional facility.
People, before I got here, the prison commissary, no one liked it.
It was
big,
not classy.
Strong prisoners came up to me and would say, "Sir, we have a terrible, terrible commissary.
We need."
A businessman, a stable genius, to run the commissary.
Before, the things there were not classy. I have made them classy.
And the license plates, they were terrible. They were the worst license plates. Now they shine. They are Trump license plates.
No one has ever seen more beautiful license plates than these.
When do I tell them to stop, or can I let them keep doing it? Oh, they can keep doing it. Okay.
We should just do this on the Jimmy Kimmel show right. or something, right? Yeah.
All right. I mean,
shoes. Okay.
Shoes. All right.
Well, yeah. But George, you're more bullish than a lot of people on Trump actually going to prison.
Yeah.
Yes.
Discuss. I mean,
talk about that because there are a lot of people.
It's really simple.
Yeah. I mean,
he's a criminal.
I have noticed a lot of criming. Yeah.
Yeah. And look at it this way. He's got the 91 counts, basically any combination of them. I mean, it's like you go to, okay, they should have a roulette wheel.
We've got the Quinella.
Like 91, you know, wherever the ball lands, that's 3 or 4 years right there. So, you know, you just a couple of spins, Bye-bye. And so that's...
I feel like you will not be sad to see him go.
I don't wish him unwell. Yeah. He is unwell. I don't wish him unwell. I mean, I don't...
I think, wouldn't you like the Republican Party back?
We're never getting it back.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's dead.
It's gone. I mean, you know, it's basically, if Trump doesn't destroy the Republican Party this year, it'll be because he got elected and he will destroy the country.
Right.
But he's not going to do that. And I think that you can already see the tensions in the Republican Party at the state level, at the federal level. You've got Henry Barber saying, no, don't spend the money on Trump's legal defense and his judgments. You know, you've got all these lunatics. I mean, at the state level, the Republican Party is a disaster because all the Looney Tunes have taken over the state parties. Michigan's a perfect example.
It's crazy. Florida, where
they can't raise any money because they're crazy.
Yep.
You know, we haven't seen everybody. I want all the Democrats to be paranoid and upset and scared.
This is what
don't sleep on this.
Yeah.
Because I want all of you people to crawl on broken glass with people on your back to the, you know, in a swing state. Please take, you know, get on JetBlue or wherever, to Florida, whatever.
Register legally.
Right. And that's the way, you know, it's when you assume that, oh, he's such an idiot, he can't win, is
right.
when he wins.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in 2016.
I remember 2016. I was talking to people around Clinton world. They're like, "Oh man, they've got this in the bag. It's amazing."
Yeah, they were hanging out in Brooklyn.
They were picking out curtains in the West Wing.
Yeah, no,
they were like, "I'm going to be the Deputy Secretary of Commerce. I'm going to be in the State Department." And where were they after that?
Yeah, and then, but they figured it out like with 7 days to go before the election, which is why they held that big rally in Philadelphia. Yeah. And it was and they never. How many times did they go to Wisconsin?
Zero.
Yeah, but the reason they did go to Wisconsin was because every time she went, it wasn't good.
Listen,
it didn't do well. Whatever.
Here's the bottom line.
Look, the reason why she lost was because the election became about her.
Yeah.
The reason why he lost in 2020 was because the election was about him, because he was the incumbent and the lunatic. And 2024, he is going to lose because he cannot help but make... Right. The election about him,
yep.
because everything has to be about him, and they can tell him, no, you have to talk about Joe Biden, and he'll mutter some things about Biden crime family,
Sleepy Joe,
and then he's going to say, blah, 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 blah,
ding, 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 bong, bong, bong,
and then people like Rick are going to run ads saying, you know, you are a lunatic, you're a madman, and he's going to say, no, I'm not. And he's going to spend all day saying, I'm a stable genius, and he's going to look like a complete idiot.
And true thing about the Lincoln Project.
And one of the things we have to do this year, and everybody was upset about this guy, the special counsel. It's like, no, he did us a favor, because he put the mental state of our presidential candidates at issue. And okay, Joe's old. He forgets stuff. I forget stuff. We're all forgetting stuff. Okay? He needs more sleep than he used to, like my dog, Bonnie.
Yes.
Okay?
Of Bonnie and Clyde.
So fucking what?
Yeah.
Okay? And.
Here, here.
All right, so let's talk about it. You got the old guy who's nice and not crazy and doesn't want to
destroy the federal government.
Be a dictator for even a minute,
or burn down the republic,
or you know, wreak vengeance upon his enemies.
That's us, by the way, in case you're wondering. That's us.
Oh, yeah.
Guantanamo 1, Guantanamo 2, Guantanamo 3.
I want the bungalow nearest to the fire pit. So I'll
bungalow. What Gitmo's known for. It's bungalows.
But anyway, I mean, you know, one of the great failures of the press was that, I mean, it's his problem isn't just that he's losing it. Like, he's losing it in terms of his ability to recall things, his language ability, his aphasia, all these things.
Right.
His problem is the same problem he's had his entire life. He's a narcissistic sociopath. And the thing that's
we're going to clap for narcissistic sociopaths.
Everybody, narcissistic
represent.
Cluster B. Let's hear it for Cluster B. We're giving a hand for all you people who know what Cluster B is. Everyone took a lot of Cluster B. We need to talk about that. And 4 years ago, oh my God, 4.5 years ago, I wrote a piece in The Atlantic that was like 11,000 words trying to get people to focus on the fact that he was a narcissistic sociopath.
Did Kellyanne like it?
No. But, you know, I mean, it got some press. It really got a lot of play in the Beltway. I think all the journalists read it and they said, oh, that makes sense. But they still wouldn't report it because
there's a normalcy bias.
Well, no. There's a click and eyeballs bias. First of all, there's everybody's used to his lunacy.
Right.
So you know we've defined deviancy down, if you will, and we've basically or psychologists or sociologists call it malignant normality, and so everything he's graded on a curve, but there's the Goldwater rule, and the press always is afraid of the Goldwater rule, which says that mental health professionals cannot talk about people who are not their patients, and so they're afraid to go near it. The problem is all the reasons behind the Goldwater rule don't apply here. Like one is, well, how can you say somebody has this condition if you haven't examined them? Dude, we have been examining this fucking guy for how many years now? Nine years, George.
9,000 years.
And it's not like it's not like it's ambiguous or marginal. I mean, if you look at, you know, this isn't hard. I mean, it's actually written in plain English, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, is the description of narcissistic personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder, the literature, the two clear ones that he clearly has. You go through 1 through 9, only like 5 of them you have to have. He's 9 for 9. I forget what it is, and they're like 5. They're like 5 of them for sociopathy. Ding, 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 ding. You only need like 3.
It's like
so much winning. So much winning.
It's like everything on the list is...
And everything, if you look at those behavioral characteristics, it explains, everything makes sense about Donald Trump. Everything. The pathological lying, that's basically part and parcel of it. The self-regard, the talking about himself, the fact that he thinks that soldiers who die to protect democracy are suckers and losers. Okay? This is Donald Trump. This is his sociopathy and his narcissism. And you know, there was one I was sort of wondering about. Well, does he assault people? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we've proven that already. And there are just so many. I mean, it literally, he checks every box. And we need to start talking about that because it explains almost everything about him, about his desire to use the government as an instrument for revenge, about his problem with not seeking consent before trying to engage in sexual relations with other people, and his thievery, stealing documents and money. Did I mention the pathological lying? Yeah. It all makes sense when you say this guy is textbook, and the press will not talk about it. They'll just say, oh, he's unconventional. Yes. Because he's a fucking lunatic.
But
take him seriously, but not literally. No, take him literally.
No, take him literally.
He's fucking crazy.
Right. No, yeah. He is crazy. And you know, I think that's something that we need to talk about this year. And now that we are...
He's the nominee again.
We're going to start talking about it. This year more than ever. And you know.
And we're going to talk about it for... The goal is we're going to talk about it for 8 months, and then we're never going to talk about him again.
There we go.
That's what we want. And then we go back to having normal politics with normal presidents who you might not agree with, but who you don't think are going to end
democracy.
You know
what, though? I don't think we're going to be clear of it, even if we beat him this year. I don't think we're going to be clear of it for a while. There's a lot of bad incentives out there. I hope so. There's a lot of bad incentives out there to make people act in crazy ways.
Right.
And
that's
not going to go away. Loose in the clubhouse, is what I like to put it.
Right.
They're running.
The
Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Lauren Boebert.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I mean, I think the Republican Party is going to fall apart because those people are not going to be able to hold it together.
Yeah. One of the things.
No, go ahead.
One of the things you would say to me for years now is you've been saying to me, he's going to destroy the Republican Party.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, functionally, the party doesn't exist
anymore. It doesn't exist anymore, right.
There's no ideology. There's no philosophy. There's no plan of governance. It's all about...
Well, there was the 2020 Republican platform.
You mean the one that was whatever Donald says goes?
Yeah, they said, we will just reprint the one from 2016.
It sounded better when it was like the Ba'ath Party platform.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a really good point. He really has all of the... It's funny because as Nikki Haley, in Nikki Haley's last sort of hurrah, she was talking about spending, government spending. And I was like, I haven't heard a Republican talk about this in like five seasons.
No, it was so quaint. I remember like that first debate. It's like,
tell us more about the before times, Grandma.
We're talking about not spending money wastefully. Wow. That's the earth I grew up on. What happened to that planet? So I give her credit for that.
Yeah.
I don't give her credit for raising her hand and saying, well, I'll vote for him even if he's a criminal.
Did she say she'd pardon him or no?
Yeah. She said several times that she's like, we just have to put it behind us. I'm like, close the jail door. He's behind us. That's all.
She seems to have gotten better lately. I just don't know how long that's going to last.
No, she's out now. She's gone.
Look,
I know she's out, but she was actually getting close to saying the right things almost consistently.
And then she was like, "And Joe Biden's bad too."
I hope she stays strong. I don't hold a lot of hope for it, though. I mean, I've just seen too many of these people join that cadre of broken men and women who oppose Trump and then said, I'm going to vote for him anyway because Biden is communism. And then you end up being like a hollow shell of a man like a Marco or a Ted Cruz.
And
what about a Rudy? If I had to bet money on that, I'd say...
A Rudy?
Rudy's
not a hollow shell of anything. Rudy is
just sloshing around.
Yeah, Rudy's destroyed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Listen, I would actually not describe it.
No, actually, full.
I wouldn't even describe it as Seagram's. I would describe it as something on the lower shelf in the plastic jug.
Wild turkey.
No, like, not even wild turkey. Like old ocelot. No. Or.
All right, we have 0 minutes left.
Yes, I'm going to break this up. This party.
it was absolutely
amazing.
All right,
George Conway.
Woo! And now your moment of fuckery.
So it's now time for moment of fuckery for you guys to close this out.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We're standing now for the moment of fuckery.
We really wanted to stand this whole time, didn't we? So we are in the moment of fuckery for people who listen to my podcast. That's something we do there. Do you do it at your podcast?
No, I do Who's on the Enemies List.
Oh, and that's good. Yeah, I listen to your podcast, so don't...
It's occasionally
funny.
That didn't make it
sound like I don't, but I do, obviously. Moment of fuckery. You're going to go first because you have real scorched earth.
My moment of fuckery is Mitch motherfucking McConnell. That is a man who at two critical moments in our American history had the chance to shut Donald Trump's shit down. He had the chance. He said the right thing after January 6th.
And he could have
when he said Donald Trump did this. He caused this. And you know what he did? You know what he did this week?
Well, I have to endorse Trump because if I don't, you know, we'll have full communism and Joe Biden is a Marxist socialist.
And guess what? This is a man who insulted Mitch McConnell's wife, who called her Coco Chow, overtly racist, unbelievably destructive to McConnell's plan to hold power in the Senate, and yet all he cares about is the vestigial twitch reflex of maintaining, I'm a Republican, therefore I must vote for Trump. The guy is divorced from every single moral aspect of what Trump is and does. And for that, Mitch McConnell is my moment of fuckery.
Nice. That was very good.
Go, girl.
All right, you're pretty good at this. So my moment of fuckery is actually something I've seen now because I was interviewing Tammy Baldwin the other day. Great senator from the state of Wisconsin, running for re-election.
Good people.
And she was saying to me, you know, they actually brought in a candidate who lives in California to run for the Wisconsin seat.
Well, it's like Dave McCormick in Pennsylvania. He flew his jet down from his house in Connecticut. I'm not kidding you.
No, he really did. This is not even a joke.
They bought a house in a very fancy neighborhood. I know because I know one of his neighbors. And they fly their jet down there when Dave has to come down for events. They commute from Connecticut to run for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. But this is happening in Wisconsin.
And he actually lives in a $7 million house in California. But these are candidates who are carpetbaggers, but they're also self-funded. And so I just wonder, and again, we are going to see more reporting on this, but I just wonder how much of these self-funded candidates are running because the RNC is having some trouble raising money.
McConnell, this was part of McConnell's plan for a long time, was to get wealthy, moderate Republicans to run and smash the MAGA. Here's the, again, going back to my moment of fuckery, the irony is that Mitch McConnell, after 2012, said, oh, fuck these Tea Party people, we're going to put more moderate Republicans in. Well, that didn't work in the end of the day. But then their plan was, oh, well, we'll get these rich guys. They're donor class guys. We know who they are. Right. They like money. We like money. and it made it easier for them to counteract the crazy.
Right.
But now and also it's all just desperation.
And also all that money is going to Trump's legal bills. So you got to get some
God bless them.
And that is our moment of fuckery.
Well, and by the way, my experience with...
We've done it. They're clapping. Okay. We've done it.
That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.